Welcome back. What's going on? I am Jim Rome. I'm going to be totally transparent with you right now. What I'm doing is we have a horse. We found our way into a horse. No, I'm not going to jinx this. Never mind. It's popping Twitter. 1-800-636-8686. I caught myself just in time. That would have been the ultimate jinx. Bad form, bad karma, bad everything. I'm just trying to get my future bet down. Okay, hey. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so I mentioned I've got two interviews coming up this hour. You already know what they are. Let me go back to one more thing that we heard at the end of the hour. Jeff in SoCal. Jeff in SoCal making light of a serious topic. And that's the worst part about that. Making light of a serious issue. Secondarily, is Jeff in SoCal ripping somebody else's bit. Somebody had already done what he just did. That somebody was Benny and Wisco, of course, who was the first one to make light of that public service announcement. A public service announcement, by the way, that none of you should be making light of. However, Jeff, somebody already did it, and that somebody was Benny in Wisco, and he did it back in 2019.
Who the hell is getting hit by trains? Who are the idiots that made the DOT take a look at us radio listeners as a whole and say, well, we certainly have to remind this group of people not to walk, drive, bike, rollerblade, or rascal themselves in front of this 5,000-ton moving machine that can only travel on tracks that are really well documented, by the way, even blocked by a barrier in most cases. I can't wait to listen to the campaigns in store for us in the future. Do not have sex with a moving farm combine. And Knife Awareness Month. Knives! They're not hot dog beaks, so don't eat them. Anyway, Rome, provided I don't get hit by a locomotive or sucked through a jet engine while walking my dog, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Funny stuff, Ben. Funny then and funny now. Just notice I'm not laughing or even smiling. He starts this thing off by saying, who the hell gets hit by a locomotive? Hey, Benny, obviously somebody, or there would not be a public service announcement. They wouldn't take the time to clear space on major platforms like this and Rich Ackerman's update if, in fact, people were not dying because they're taking their chances. They get to an intersection and they don't stop. Or they think to themselves, oh, I can make it. I can make it. I'll say it one more time, Ben. I'll say it one more time, Jeff. When you get to an intersection, stop because the train can't. You mind if we move on to the next thing? Squirrel 2 tweets, I can't stop eating. Yours, the Lane Train. Lane Train gave his former boss all he could handle over the weekend. But Bama's giving up a lot of yardage, aren't they? Lots of yardage defensively. All right, you mind if I get back to work? You mind if I get back to the show? You mind if I get back to being responsible? Give me back my show. So October's always been synonymous with baseball. We know this. Mr. October. 2020, though, of course, is a really weird year. Very chaotic year. An anomaly of sorts. So it's no surprise that last night's opener of the ALCS was swallowed whole by 11 NFL games and LeBron. Postseason baseball is not supposed to be an afterthought. And a footnote in the fall. Yesterday was exactly that. But if you missed it, I've got you. I've got you covered right now. Before, though, I get to game one of the ALCS, why don't we double back to Friday's game five between the Yankees and Rays in the ALDS? The extremely rare story from a Friday that jumps the entire weekend. And you're about to find out why that is. Especially after game one of the ALCS has already been played. I'm still going to double all the way back to Friday. Remember Rays utility man Mike Brasso? He got some run on the show last month when Yankees closer Aroldis Chapman threw 101 over his head and then struck him out to end a regular season game back on September 1st. The sequence was as dumb as it was dangerous, and it was dangerous as hell. It led Rays skipper Kevin Cash to threaten the Yankees with, quote, a stable full of guys who throw 98. Remember that quote. Then one day later, Brasso went full Brasso and left the yard twice. At that time, it felt like the ultimate revenge. A dish he served ice cold to the Yanks with a second helping. But then on Friday night, the stakes were dialed up to infinity. Game 5, win or go golfing. All tied up in the ninth. And who is standing in? Who's on the bump? Who's at the dish? Brasso, standing in against the very guy who tried to turn him into a Pez dispenser over a month earlier. The kind of head-to-head that if you were to write into some cheese ball Hollywood script, nobody would believe it. Except it happened. It was real life. This really did happen.
Well, this is an interesting confrontation here.
Chapman threw over the head of Mike Brasso September 1st. Bench is cleared. These teams don't like each other at all. 3-2. Brasso sends one into left field. Gardner going back, and it is up and gone! Mike Brasso has homered, and the Rays have a 2-1 lead. What a moment for Brasso. Tampa Bay on top on the 10th pitch of the at-bat.
You could feel that coming as the at-bat got longer.
World-class at-bat right there. 10 pitches into the home run. And now the Rays.
That's exactly what that was. A world-class at-bat. A world-class moment. And now you know why a Friday news dump turned into a Friday news jump. Cody Bellinger's robbery. Fernando Tatis Jr. cannot believe the magnitude of that postseason moment. Mike Brasso just sent the Yankees home, and he did it by jumping ship in the biggest moment, on the biggest stage, in the ninth inning of that elimination game against a guy who tried to kill him a month earlier. Have some, Chapman. So, yes, I've got to go back to that Friday. How can I not before I talk about what happened in game one of the ALCS? I mean, Yankee fan, I know you were hoping that I was going to forget about that altogether or that wouldn't make the jump, but there was no way that was not going to make the jump. Especially when that story from Friday is what's most responsible for the matchup and the series that kicked off yesterday. You know, the red-hot, hated Astros against the Yankee-killing Tampa Bay Rays. Interesting matchup. Offensive explosion versus rock solid pitching, timely hitting, two totally different teams who win in different ways. And last night it looked like the Astros might be the ones who were going to dictate the situation because Jose Altuve turned around Blake Snell's 10th pitch and that ball went about 400 feet. And for as jacked up as Altuve was during the regular season, he is once again a beast. In the playoffs, hitting 300, leaving the yard every ninth at bat and driving in 7 so far. In other words, doing Altuve-type things in the postseason like he always does. Except Snell did settle in after that, and he gave Kevin Cash 4 scoreless innings before the bullpen took over and did its job. Then, in the bottom of the 5th, Rays catcher Mike Zunino slapped a first pitch sinker right back up the middle to break that 1-1 tie.
Two outs in the inning. Here is Zunino. First ball swinging, and it's through the shift for a base hit. Adamas will score, and the Rays have taken a 2-1 lead. Mike Zunino ambushing the first pitch. It's an RBI single, and Tampa Bay is on top here in this 5th inning.
So who cares, right? 2-1 in the 5th. What's the big deal? Nothing big, right? Nothing hurt. Yeah, let's not get into that. Because the Rays went into last night 15-5 in one-run games. And then added to that mark. So when they get that one-run lead, that is something. Now their 7.62 winning percentage in one-run games is the best winning percentage by any team over any season ever. So essentially, that's who they are. That's what they do. They get up on you, and then it is a boat race because they win about 76% of the time when they've got that lead. Easier said than done, of course, against a lineup that boasts the likes of Altuve, Correa, Springer, and Bregman. But so far, so good. And then you've got the Dodgers and the Braves getting underway tonight from Globe Life Field in Arlington after Game 2. Of the Astros and the Rays from San Diego. biggest difference in the series is not the teams or the leagues or the locations. It's the fact that the Dodgers and the Braves are going to play in front of actual fans. 11,500 in baseball's first game of 2020 with people in the stands. So if those cardboard cutouts look like they're moving tonight, it's because they are. Because they're not cutouts and you're not tripping. Globe Life is going to host the NLCS and the World Series, and they're going to put 11,500 fans into the stands for each game. So, now the Rays and the Astros aren't just playing for a trip to the biggest stage. They're playing for a right to actually play in front of people. Yo, what's cracking, new wrinkle? Baseball fans. Wow. And the never-ending weirdness of 2020. One series in front of a cardboard, one series in front of flesh and blood, no true home teams. As the old man on the other side of the glass would say, game on.
Game on.
Finally.
Game on.
Finally.
Finally.
Game on.
Game on.
Finally.
Finally.
ALCS underway. NLCS about to get underway. And let's go to the phones. Let's go to New York. Woody in New York. I'd ask you how you are, Woody, but I already know. What's up, Woody?
Heartbreak builds character. You know you've made it in the jungle when Francis from Glendale takes shots at me for my Yankee call last week, and then you, the pimp in the box, totally crack back on Francis. Good times absolutely made my day. Well, the division series was lost by the Yankees, what I did like. The $300 million man is worth every penny. Dude went on short rest. You can't ask any more than that. Total respect. One half of the glass towers, Mikey Stanton, can definitely hit in the postseason. Gio Urshela is fantastic at third base. What I didn't like, probably a longer list. Gleyber Torres is not a good shortstop. Judge and Voit can talk the talk, but definitely can't walk the walk. And right here, this was it. Cashman and his analytic guys for coming up with that abysmal Game 2 debacle, and Aaron Boone for going along with it. Somebody should lose their job, but they won't. Totally handcuffed our options for the rest of the series. Back to Aaron Boone. Several in-game decisions were absolute head-scratchers. Pinch-hitting Ford for Higgy, thus putting the defensive liability Gary behind the dish and kind of limiting the type of pitches Chappie could throw, I just don't know. Compounding that, you're expecting Chappie to get seven outs when he's never done it before? Are you freaking kidding me? There are plenty more, but whatever. I absolutely refuse to tip my cap to the Rays. We blew this series in game two. Cash, keeping his job.
Woody! Woody! Shark! Woody! Shark! Get out of the water, Woody! Woody, swim! Woody! Shark! Get out of the water, Woodrow! Woody! There's a shark! Get out, Woody! Shark! Woody! That's what I do sometimes when I don't want to really hammer a guy or run a guy because, I mean, it was a solid phone call. And he wasn't being irresponsible. He was just running on long. You know, kind of like when you're at an awards ceremony and they start the Jaws music when they're trying to get you off the stage. That's what I did with Woody. I didn't want to disrespect him, but I wanted to get him off the stage. So what we do is we have that analogy. You're in the water. You're swimming around. You're having a good time. You think that everybody else is having a good time. But then all of a sudden, in reality, there's a shark. You've got to make it to shore or you're going to get eaten. None of us have any say in how we go. But I think most of us would agree the one way we don't want to go is by being swallowed whole by a shark. That's Woody. Ask anybody who has been shown exit stage left. Anybody who has had the Jaws music come up underneath them while on stage. Anybody who's had the lights flicker on them. Anybody who's had their mic cut. That's not how you want to go. I'm not going to mention any names. Woody. Connie Selica. It'll happen. It's unfortunate. Woody! Swim, because you're like, you know they're not going to make it to shore. How are any of us going to outswim a shark? A hungry shark. Checking the reaction. Stucknut. Stucknut tweets, first devil rays, then a shark. Poor Woody. At Johnny Scabs, Woody in New York's call would have been better if he just read the Encyclopedia Britannica. Jamie in Green Bay, Woody and Iconic. Wake me up when this call is over.
Iconic.
Hey, man, Woody knows Yankee baseball. Woody is passionate about Yankee baseball. Woody was feeling it. But you got to tighten it up a little bit. Even Woody. And I'm a fan of Woody and what he brings to it. But you got to tighten it up. Otherwise, you're going to hear that music. GOP tweets, how come these guys call themselves clones and be so freaking oblivious? You know, because they get caught up. They get drunk. They get drunk on themselves or on their topic. It'll happen. When we come back, Chris Mannix will be joining us. As you know, he is a senior writer for SI. That's next. Teofimo Lopez is your IBF lightweight champ. That's coming up in the final segment of the program. In and around it, I got to work in an ATP, something that I will do. Do not go anywhere. We're rolling through hour number three. We're talking some basketball with Chris Mannix when we come back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, we're joined right now by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Also an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. Also a boxing analyst for DAZN. Also host of the Crossover NBA Show podcast. Also host of the SI Boxing podcast with Chris Mannix. My man is really busy and he's back. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, Jim?
How you doing, man?
Glad that the 50-week season has finally wound down.
My man, I would imagine you are, and this always goes back to the conversation you and I had way back in the day when you would appear on my TV show daily, and you would talk about, man, you know what's important to me? Balance, quality of life, and yet you are grinding harder than anybody right now. All right, so Chris, go back to Friday night. What did you make of the game overall, and in particular, what Jimmy Butler and the Heat did when it would have been so much easier to fold and just go home?
Yeah, and having been in the bubble as long as I was, I had seen teams in similar positions, you know, kind of bail out in a way, or at least not, you know, get going when it got tough. Because, you know, there's it's a daunting task to be down 3-1, especially to a team like the Lakers. So as impressive as it was to see the Heat come out strong the way they did, it was more impressive to watch them come back after giving up a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was kind of the moment you would have expected Miami to crumble, with LeBron, you know, sort of playing the role of Tiger Woods on a Sunday, just ready to close them out. But they rallied from that, and, you know, Jimmy Butler went punch for punch with LeBron and finished it off. But even after that, Jim, you know, you could tell that the Heat left everything on the floor. I mean, whether it was from how they played, the amount of minutes that they played, or even watching a guy like Butler after the game kind of walk very slowly off the podium, step gingerly. I mean, he had gone through so much in the last couple of weeks physically to get through to this point. You just had a feeling that that was their championship, that not folding when people expected them to do was – their big opportunity.
Chris Mannix joining us. I agree with you, which is why last night I think that when the Lakers came in locked in the way they were, there was nothing Miami was going to be able to do to hold off that onslaught, especially since they had left it all out there the game before. You know, Chris, when you look at the Lakers, though, it's really easy to look at them right now and say, of course they were going to win a title. But if you go back to the start of last season, and more than a year ago when there was that suggestion that Frank Vogel might be replaced very quickly, that LeBron was coming off the worst injury of his career, that Anthony Davis was unproven in high-pressure playoff situations, they had all those new faces they had to incorporate. Like, how sure of a thing was it back then that the Lakers were going to win it all?
Oh, I don't think it was a sure thing at all. And, you know, there are countless Lakers fans right now claiming to have known it was, but show me the receipts. Like, I don't believe you, Laker Nation. I don't believe that in, you know, the spring you were all in on Frank Vogel after Vogel spent 2 years in Orlando and got fired. I don't believe that you were this, you know, big believer in Dwight Howard's ability to make an impact or Rajon Rondo's ability to make an impact. I don't even believe, frankly, that you were 100% sure about LeBron James. I mean, he was 35 years old or in his 35th year season, coming off a year where he played 55 games, the fewest of his career, had the most significant injury of his career. So you had every reason to be optimistic that they'd be better with Anthony Davis, a legitimate top five player. But please, like, I don't want to hear it from Laker fans that this was inevitable, that the skeptics out there were just Laker haters or LeBron haters. I mean, give me a break. This team was, at one point, Jim, in July, they had three players on the roster. Like, remember, they waited out Kawhi Leonard and then had to deal with NBA leftovers. I mean, Rondo played great in these playoffs, but where were these Laker fans back in February when, you know, the Darren Collison was being courted like the girl you couldn't get in high school? Like, it was just, it's crazy to think that this was all, you know, preordained back in September, October, when that couldn't be any further from the truth.
So right. So right. Chris Mannix joining us. All right. So, Chris, when you talk about LeBron, we see, I mean, to your point, entering this season at age 35, 17th year overall, coming off the most significant injury of his career. There's what he accomplished as a player this year, which is astonishing. But what's the title say about LeBron as a leader and his evolution in that regard?
I mean, it says enormous things. It makes a strong statement about his leadership. And look, we knew he was a strong leader coming into all this. He took on a Cavaliers team that had an unproven talent in Kyrie Irving, a guy that's won nothing in the playoffs in Kevin Love, a bunch of other pieces that have been on some bad Cavaliers team, and elevated them into a championship. So his leadership in general was beyond reproach. But everything the Lakers went through, from the day Kobe Bryant passed away in that crash to the end of the season, from the stoppage to the social justice issues to the stoppage again mid-bubble. Like, LeBron took a leadership role within that team the entire time, and players looked to him for an example. He said it. So, you know, I thought coming into all this, he was a proven leader, but I think he did elevate himself in that regard over the last, let's say, 10 months of this turbulent Lakers season.
Talking to Chris Mannix for a few more moments. So, Chris, like, ranking NBA titles can be like a really strange exercise, but if you were to rank LeBron's four championships, where does this one rank?
Oh, it's number two, right behind the Cleveland championship. I mean, nothing will ever surpass what happened in Cleveland to win a title in a city that, you know, it was half a century since they last won a title, to do it in the way that they did it, coming back from 3-1 down against, you know, statistically, the best team in NBA history. That, I mean, nothing will ever touch that. But this is far more significant than what he did in Miami, winning a championship against Oklahoma City in 2012, winning against the Spurs in 2013. I mean, this is the second most significant accomplishment of his career. And if not for the overall significance of what happened in Cleveland, this would be a pretty clear number one. In fact, I think the only thing it really competes with, Jim, is Game 6 in the conference finals against Boston in 2012. You remember that? Like, the year before, they lost in the finals. They were down 3-2 to Boston in that conference finals. And if they had lost that game 6, Oh, man, it could have been bad for LeBron in Miami. He can't win anything brigade whipping out in full force. But LeBron went out there, and I was at that game. He had just one of the most incredible playoff performances of his career, of anybody's career, and put that team on his back to win in the Garden and force a game seven that they eventually won. So I think the three most significant accomplishments, team accomplishments of LeBron's career are the Cleveland title, this title, and that's a close third is what happened in that game against Boston.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, Chris, so what about Miami? Quickly, where do the Heat go from here?
Well, you run the whole thing back if you can. You try to get Goran Dragic on a short-term deal. You've got Robinson. You've got Hero. You've got Adebayo. You got Butler. All these guys signed to long-term deals. But you don't go out there and sign anybody that would be beyond next season because you have your eye on the biggest prize in free agency in 2021. That's Giannis. And if you're Miami, you have submitted the best audition you can possibly have for Giannis. You beat him in the playoffs in five games, and then you went on and gave LeBron the toughest test he could have in the finals. You can't make any stronger case to Giannis that, look, you come down to our team, embrace our system, live on South Beach, we can win a championship with you. So you run the whole thing back if you can next year, and then you go out there and try to bring in that next superstar in 2021.
All right, so last thought, Chris. I would imagine it would be nice for you to have a breath or two, kind of relax. I hate to hit you with this, but what is your sense as to when the new season will start? What is the plan going forward? The NBA did such an amazing job within the bubble, and I think other leagues can follow suit, but when do they run this thing back and start up again?
Well, it's an incredibly fluid situation, Jim. It really is, because everything is predicated on the league's ability to get back into arenas. If the league sees a pathway to get into arenas, either through a vaccine or some form of rapid testing that's readily available, they'll push the season back to February, even March. If it doesn't look like that's going to be feasible, I could see the league going into regional bubbles, not one big bubble, but regional bubbles as early as January. I don't think anything starts before January. You might get training camp opening up maybe just after Christmas or early January, but everything is going to be dependent on what the landscape looks like in terms of arenas. We know, Jim, 40% of that league revenue comes from fans and the gate revenue they provide. The NBA is not going to just ignore that. They're going to find any way possible to get as many games in as they can in their arenas, and they're probably going to be willing to wait as long as they have to do it.
So my brother, what are you going to do now? You finally bust out of the bubble. You might get a moment or two, but the world has changed. You can't go running off to an airport. Like, what do you do now?
Well, I mean, I just got my DAZN schedule. I'm basically on every weekend through the end of the year. So those planes will still be flying, Jim. I'll just have to be a little more careful when I get on them.
He is a boxing analyst for DAZN. He is an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. He is a senior writer for SI. Lots of things and a very good friend of the program. Chris, great job. Appreciate you. Stay safe, and it's great to have you back.
Anytime, Jim.
Great job, dude. My man Chris Mannix is doing work. Lots of work. All right, when we return, we've got another conversation for you with a world champion, no less, IBF lightweight boxing champ. Teofimo Lopez joins me to wrap things. Guy getting ATP in here. Quick reminder, when you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, Alvin, they're focused on you. They're ready to offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. So call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL, 877-ASK-DELL. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. One last segment for you. Good to be with you on this Monday, though. As promised, we are joined right now by a world champion, IBF lightweight world champion, 15-0, 12 wins by knockout. He was the 2013 National Silver Gloves champion, the 2015 National Golden Gloves champion, a winner of the 2015 Olympic trials, Lomachenko v. Lopez. Is Saturday night on ESPN. They will be fighting for the WBA, IBF, and WBO plus the ring lightweight titles. So that's a big, big fight. Teofimo Lopez is my guest. He is the champ. Teofimo, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm doing good, man. Feeling like a champ.
Good, dude. Good. You sound like a champ. Good to have you on. So it's fight week. I'm curious, how did camp go? How are you feeling a few days out from this fight?
Oh, man. Camp couldn't have been any better, especially during these circumstances and with the pandemic and COVID-19 right now. Man, it's definitely been one of my best camps, I got to say. Honestly, better than the Richard Comey fight that I had against the world champion of himself for the IBF lightweight world title back in December 14th of 2019, and back at the Madison Square Garden. I feel very great, man. How I feel, man, I'm excited. It's fight week. Man, all emotions everywhere right now, just taking it all in and taking it day by day. Can't wait, man. Can't wait to be in that ring. Can't wait to put on a pair of 8-ounce gloves and just start using them.
Teofimo Lopez, my guest. That fight's coming up this weekend. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned the Comey fight because I wanted to ask you about that. You go back a few months. You beat him in December with a second-round TKO at Madison Square Garden. When you look back at that fight, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Man, it was all surreal, man. Just taking it all in, though, honestly, man. Everything was huge, man. Everything. Just being in that arena, I love it. It's my home, man. That's definitely my home, and it feels like a second home. It's a home to me, man, just to be at Madison Square Garden, to be there and win my first world title there. Man, that right there alone is a dream come true, you know, and just to be able to face a world-class fighter like Richard Comey, who has all the experience in the world, and just to do what I did, you know, it goes to show that sky's the limit.
Hey, listen, it's true. It's one thing to beat a fighter like that. It's another thing to beat a fighter like that on a big stage like that, especially in that building. But you demolished him. His two previous losses were decisions, and you came out and you overwhelmed him in the second round. So what did it feel like to have that kind of performance on that big of a stage on that night?
Oh, man, I honestly, words can't explain how I felt, man. Just to do what I did and the amount of time that I did it against a fighter like Richard Comey, I'm speechless, man. But I know that that comes with hard work. That comes with the amount of sacrifices that I've done throughout my years of the game, you know, 18 years in and counting. You know, this is just the beginning, though. You know, I think that definitely the fight with Richard Comey was my breakthrough. This one is just to put the stamp on it and let everybody know that this is my time. You know, so against Vasily Lomachenko, for all the belts, winner takes all. And you wouldn't want it any other way right now.
No, it's a really challenging fight. It's a dangerous fight, to be sure. It sets up a fight with Lomachenko, who is ranked number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And a lot of guys would not want this fight. A lot of guys certainly would not want this fight at age 23. But you've made it clear that it is your time, and you do want this fight. Why is the time right for this fight right now?
Because I'm not everybody else, and that's what sets me different. You know, I'm built different. I think differently, and I look different. I fight different, and the whole thing comes to it, man, is the takeover. You know, that's what it comes to, man. I don't say it. And it's not something that I use just to use, man, just because it sounds good. No, we make it look good at the same time. So I'm very happy about it, you know. And a lot of people think this is a dangerous fight. Nah, it's every fight is a dangerous fight. You know, the only difference is that this one right here is one of the biggest fights of this year. So I'm looking forward to it, you know, and the fact that I'm part of it, you know. So that's the type of fights, and those are the type of things that Teofimo Lopez brings to the table. So expect more, you know, and this is just the beginning.
Teofimo Lopez is the IBF lightweight world champion. That fight's coming up this weekend. You know, you've called Lomachenko, quote, a conniving son of a bleep and a bleeping diva. I got to ask you, man, what is it about this guy that you see that you do not like or do not respect?
I've interacted with him personally through many occasions. You know, the boxing world is very small. As big as it may seem, business-wise and just being around the fighters, it's you know, everyone knows one another. So, you know, just my interactions with him and just to see how he carries himself, you know, I get it. You have to carry yourself at a certain point the way he does. But to me, I feel like there's just there draws a line in that part. So I have my reasons, and I have my good reasons why. You know, I don't judge anyone unless I'm judged first. And, you know, that's what it came to. So, you know, I think for everyone, man, just tune in October 17th. Do not miss it. It's 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. For everyone to tune in, man, you do not want to miss this type of fight, the magnitude of it, and just it's live on ESPN.
So when they tune in and they lock in to watch that fight, what kind of a fight are people going to see when they tune in Saturday night? What can they expect?
All right, man, it's fireworks, man. You're definitely going to expect technicality. You're definitely going to experience fighters, man, going at it. And the fact that, you know, they don't like one another, so it's bad blood, you know, and you know, going out there for all the belts, you know. So it's more than just facing one another. It's what comes with it afterwards. And I think that's definitely what's going to put that for everyone to tune in, man. There's a lot of tension going around, and this is one of the fights that you definitely do not want to miss. It's already history in the making. You got two fighters that are trained by their fathers and who are their head coaches, and it's pretty much a father and son duo match. And there's only going to be one coming out victorious, and that's Teofimo.
And by the way, that in and of itself is really unusual that you've got both fighters trained by their fathers. I was going to ask you about that. Your father does train you. You know, when you look at the sport and the history of the sport, that does not always go well. In fact, that can get kind of wonky and kind of funky sometimes. What's it like to work with your dad, and what have you learned from him?
Oh, man, working with my father, it's been a roller coaster ride, you know?
Right.
Just like anything else, man. But the whole thing really is the experience and the amount of time that we take, you know, doing what we do and what we love. We have a passion for it, you know, and, you know, we've had difficult times and we've had a great moment. So just for that, we enjoy everything that comes in our way and everything that comes to us. You know, nothing was ever given to us. We take it, we go out there and we show it, and that's us every time, and we earn it. So, it's been great, man, and I wouldn't want no other coach to have trained me. You know, it's been a great relationship, and we understand one another, and I know that he's always going to make sure that no matter what, you know, I'm always okay.
That fight's coming up this weekend. It's going to be a big one. Saturday on ESPN, it is for the WBA, IBF, WBO, and the Ring Lightweight titles. Lomachenko v. Lopez. Teofimo Lopez, our guest. Teofimo, great to have you on, champ. Thank you very much. Good luck on Saturday. I'll be watching, and I know that's a great matchup.
Thank you so much. And for everyone, yeah, tune in, man. It's the takeover.
It is the takeover. Looking forward to it. Nice job. The IBF lightweight champ. He's 15-0. That sounds like he doesn't have a lot of experience, but that could not be further from the truth. He had an amazing amateur career as well. Plenty of fights. So I like that matchup. I like that matchup a lot. I save time for the ATP. I'm smart like that. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Got somebody new in here. Dave Romy is a well-known former rocker of the Magic Blue. Had you ever been to the Bombay Sapphire Distillery?
Bombay Sapphire.
I did while I was in England, thanks to you. It was amazing. Since their botanicals are their big deal, I am looking for drink variations to help bring them out. What were your favorite drinks sporting the blue? Thanks, Dave. Dude, what a great point. No, I've never been, believe it or not. Been to London a number of times, never went to the distillery. Problem is, my man, my guy, I can't help you with that because I never mixed it with anything. Back in my day, back during my Bombay Sapphire era, my period, my Bombay Sapphire period slash era, I drank it
Bombay
straight
Sapphire.
Up. I was a martini man through and through. The only thing I ever mixed it with was vermouth, and then only a splash, and then I stopped doing that too. Like, I couldn't have that thing dry enough. So, I can't really advise you. I never mixed it with anything.
Lots of
ever.
Ice.
No ice. Olives. And no juice. No olive juice. I didn't like it dirty. All I would do when I did that was shake it up, pour it in, drop a couple olives, never eat the olives, and then give the olives to the kids. And then Logan at age 9 could tell me what kind of gin it was. And I thought that was an incredible parlor trick, and his mother was mortified. And my favorite time of all, when he was 9, is when I dropped a couple of olives into some Grey Goose vodka. And I said, hey, tough guy, what is that? Is that Hendrix, or is that Bombay, or is that something else? He looks at me and he goes, I guess neither. I'm like, dang.
Correct.
At least he didn't know what kind of vodka it was. That would have been a problem. Grainger helps your business move forward with supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Call, click, Grainger.com, or just stop on by. My thanks to the champ, Teofimo Lopez, Chris Mannix, Darius Butler, and the XR4 Ti Plus U clone. See ya.